Okay, and we'll have to do that talk on Kundalini too. I've been meaning to do that for a long time. Okay, I've got a little note here. So if you watch the Permanent Heart Seed film, you might say at the end of the day, what you would see recorded is every single thing you had thought, felt, done, said, heard, everything. It doesn't miss anything. It's your own private library, your own private record. So now the thing I want to say about the Heart Seed Atom too is that it holds your karmic destiny, or what people like to call fate. It does hold the record of what you need to learn and what you need to grow through and what you've done in the past that wasn't quite in balance and all of that stuff. But the other two permanent atoms, the emotional and the mental, are free will choice. You can choose what you think or feel. That's free will choice. And your free will choice determines two-thirds of how your life is going to be. The other third is determined by your permanent heart seed atom, the karmic, the things that you need to complete or let go of or heal, all those kinds of things. Okay. Well, and that's the best way I can say it to talk to you about. You do have free will choice, but destiny or destiny slash fate is involved here. Some of it is determined, but you are always the one who has determined it. So, in a bottom nutshell sense, you might say you truly are the creator. You know, you are the creator of your own life, your own story, everything. You always have been. Okay. Oh, and then I've got a note. Another thing that Jesus said was overcome evil with good. And I think, again, he's talking a lot more than about a lot more than just what those words say. What he means there is you can change your thought, you can change your feelings, and you can change your permanent heart seed record with the goodness that you bring to each life experience. And then I wanted to say too that to constantly focus on all of that really requires the attitude of a yogi or someone that you might think of as a saint or a highly evolved being. Most of us, our lives are so full with all the distractions of family, children, work, the world, etc., that we aren't always focusing on those things. But what you can do is pray on a daily basis or meditate on a daily basis or have some daily spiritual practice that immediately moves you into that state which is balanced, which is peaceful, which is calming and centering, grounding, and which does the work that you'll need to have done when you get to your own personal death. It does help you. Okay. I think really that's probably all I want. Oh, I do have a little note here that when I'm talking about choice, you know, we see a lot of people that come in with disabilities or addictions or whatever it might be. You can choose to go through a lifetime with and meet that major addiction or meet that major disability or whatever it might be, such as blindness, say. And you can do it in one lifetime and learn whatever the lessons are to be learned from that, perhaps. Or you can choose to do it with sort of a semi-disability over a series of lifetimes. I'm saying that because I just want you to know that it really is your choice all the way along how much you want to do and when you want to do it. It really is. The universe supports us totally in doing that as we choose. Okay. To talk about death, then, after talking about the three permanent seed atoms, let's see, how can I start this? When one knows that one is nearing the end physically, I guess the first place to start is to say that the soul begins to withdraw its energy and it moves, it pulls out, coming up out of the crown. So it's not uncommon that you have a person who says their feet are freezing or who no longer feels their feet or legs, and the toenails may even have turned blue. The skin may be ashen looking or kind of gray or kind of blue. And that has to do with the fact that the life force energy is moving up the spine. The soul is really leaving. And The last atom to leave is the heart seed atom. The emotional and the mental atoms leave first. And what they do is they pull up and go out through the crown and into the astral, where a new body will be built. If you are a psychic person, or you just happen to be really conscious and aware at someone's deathbed, you may begin to see kind of a cloudy thing in the room, or some people call it a mist, and I've heard others call it, like, it looks like a silvery smoke. To me, it just kind of looks like an effervescence. I don't know. There's a lot of light, and it's there and it's not there all at the same time. And that is the beginning gatherings of the energy, which is finished in this body and is going to get coalesce and then begin to create the astral body. And so the soul kind of moves up, and let me say this. We have in the spinal column what's called Sushumna, which is the central canal that is in the spinal column and through which Kundalini moves. And there are lots of other ethers and liquids that move there too, but that's known as Sushumna. And then you have the silver cord, which is the Sutratma, and that is attached to the soul and to the heaven worlds. And that, as long as the silver cord is not broken, you are alive and have your being and your essence in this physical body. And one of the reasons that we teach not to disturb or bury, cremate, or otherwise upset the physical body for 3 days is that it can take as long as 72 hours for the astral body to be completely formed, and especially for the permanent heart seed atom to have moved into the heart of the new body. And so it's hard to have something happen. If you die suddenly, as in battle, like we kind of were talking about last time, or a car accident, the astral body will be formed eventually, but it's a bit of a shock, and that's why sometimes you have people who don't recognize that they're dead, that kind of thing. It all happens so suddenly, you don't have kind of time to prepare. But if you are lucky to have a death that is rather lingering, you have a nice slow process of leaving, of getting used to what that feels like, and of doing all of the work that you needed to do before you leave. So the body is more easily formed. Oh, and the other thing I want to say, we've heard a lot about near-death experience and how there is this going through the tunnel. Well, guess what? The Sutratma, the silver cord, and the Sushumna is like a great tunnel, you might say, from the base of the spine all the way up until the energy awakens the pineal and the pituitary glands, and the brain becomes very porous and filled with light, and it is like going through a tunnel and then into the light. The astral realm is much different light-wise than it is here. This light is quite harsh by comparison. And the other light that you meet when leaving the body, the clear light of the first part of the bardo, is quite brilliant and dazzling. So there is that whole business of going through a dark tunnel, you might say, and then into the light. And I often think that that's going to be discovered as medicine and science begins more and more to blend. We'll know more about that, I think, as we move into the next century. I hope, anyway. Okay, so as the life force pulls up, the hands and arms get cold, the breathing becomes real labored or sonorous, like I talked about last time. And then as all that's happening, the physical's kind of going downhill, but you're becoming quite active and are extremely conscious, in fact, hyperconscious, I would say. And in the Buddhist teachings, they say that no sound should disturb the person at this point. No one should be talking. There should be no one grieving, loud crying, or anything. That crying and sobbing and grieving and calling to the person is like thunder and hail, I think is the term they use in the Book of Living and Dying, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. It's extremely distracting, and the work that you're about is very sacred and very important, so you need that kind of quiet. Okay, so the emotional seed atom withdraws first, and it exits through the silver cord out the crown, and then all pain to the body stops. And when this happens, this is often the time when someone who's been on morphine or very heavy drugs can suddenly not really need them anymore. Sometimes people do come awake from kind of a death coma at this point and can say goodbye or whatever. So there's no pain once the emotional seed atom withdraws, and that's why some of us don't have to have those heavy drugs. And then you have this incredible expanded feeling, this awareness, you know, that something great and wonderful is happening. A lot of people become extremely psychic and can see and know everything that's around them. And the thing is not to get distracted by that, but just to keep observing what's happening. And I've got down here that some people awaken from coma and say goodbye. It's also during this time that a lot of people have the experience of seeing their loved ones who've crossed over, or their particular spiritual teachers or masters, their angels. They might hear beautiful music or see just glorious landscapes. And they might also be truly engulfed in bliss and a spiritual ecstasy. And that when a person is experiencing that and is still articulate through the physical body, what they are often describing or trying to put into words is their experiencing of the first clear light that dawns. And there are different terms that are given to these. I usually just call it the clear light of the void, or the clear light of the all. It's not, by void I don't mean the absence of anything. I mean, it's very hard to put into words, but the light that is all. So it's the light that is the Creator, the light that is God, Father, Mother, God, however you like to say that. So once they've said their goodbyes and everything, they usually go into that final death coma. And there's a wonderful story that's told about William Blake, who saw angels from the time he was a little boy and would often paint them. He had this wonderful ability for angelic poetry and his wonderful artwork. And when he was dying, he sang all the time. He sang spiritual songs. And his wife sat by him through that whole thing. And eventually, I think he kind of arose from his deep state and said something like, they're all here. And then he began to describe the angels that he saw. And this blissful look came over his face. And then he took his last breath and expired. And the minister who was ministering to him during this time said that he truly felt he hadn't witnessed the death of a human being, but of an angel incarnate, that it was such a transforming experience. And you could see the light, you know, coming from his face and everything. So it's that kind of ecstasy that some people move into. And if you can not be afraid of that and stay totally open to that, you merge with that first clear light. And that's a truly transformational experience, and you are completely healed then. We'll talk a little bit more of that in a few minutes. I want to get back to what happens here. As your consciousness becomes more aware, this takes a short time, usually only about 30 minutes, for the emotional seed atom to leave and for the mental seed atom to leave. And at this point, clinical death usually occurs and the heart stops beating. The heart seed atom is still present. So the doctor will pronounce death, but it's at this point that the body should be kept quiet and still. And so we refrigerate the body, generally speaking, and hold it for 3 days. You shouldn't allow embalming or anything else until the end of that 3-day period. And sometimes they say for about 1 to 15 hours, the cord can maintain its attachment, and then breaks, and the finishing process of the astral body gets completed. Now, it's said that if your emotions and your thoughts in this lifetime were fairly, you know, good, for the most part you were a pretty good person, you weren't filled with hate and loathing all the time, that the astral body created for you is quite beautiful and often has a visage of being somewhat younger if you're not a real young person when you die, that the astral will appear younger. And There are lots of stories of people who literally see a face appear in this mist that they observe, and it's very beautiful, and they're not sure if it's the person that just died, but there's some resemblance. You'll hear stories like that. And so the astral body that you create is entirely dependent on what you've done emotionally and mentally this lifetime, very much dependent on that. And whether or not you'll be able to use your astral senses well, your sight, there are lots of automatic writings and other channeled writings of people who crossed over and said they couldn't, it was dim, you know, for a long time, they couldn't really see. That has to do with how you use your vision this lifetime. And they couldn't hear well or couldn't move about very well. It's all connected. So the love and affection that you carry for this body and the five senses you have and the way you monitor your thoughts and feelings really has an impact on the body that you have, the light body you have when you leave. One of the teachings in the Tibetan work is that you can, at the moment of physical death, project your consciousness into this clear light or hold to the visage of your master or your spiritual teacher and ask that your mind or the essence that you are meld or merge with the essence of that being, and that in so doing you make that clear connection with that light and so are released, or as the Bible says, your sins are forgiven. But what it really is that all of us are given that chance no matter where we are in life. Everyone experiences the first dawning of the clear light, whether you are the lowest of the low or the most evolved on the planet. We all go through that. So if you can merge with that light, your karmic debt is healed, and you have choice then as to whether or not you ever incarnate again. And you go on into the paradise worlds. Okay, and then the heart seed atom finally leaves after the new astral form is really complete. And the reason this can take 72 hours is that some births are longer than others, as those of us who are mothers can testify to. Birth here and birth there, okay? So, and then the three phases of the bardo. We've talked a little bit about the dawning of the clear light. Those who are initiates or who are really steeped in the teachings or who have that pure and open heart, immediately recognize this light and open themselves to it. There's no fear and there's no apprehension, there's no question. They just move to the light. And because the level of their own vibration or their own energy is at a very high state, it can merge very easily with the high voltage of this light, you might say, that we all spring from. And the secondary light that happens is what most of us who have some education in spiritual things experience after the clear dawning of the first light. And every soul that experiences that responds however they wish, depending on what their own education is and what their own structures and belief systems are about life after death or God or spirituality, all of those things. This light dawns about 30 minutes after clinical death. So you can see that once the heart stops, this amazing process is going on. And this is one reason why the body does need to be kept very still and the room needs to be very quiet. I've also got here that those who perceive the second light are aware of loved ones around them and are welcomed, usually into one of the upper levels of the astral world. And some people give this a name and call it Summerland, where you can have an experience of anything that is good, and you can create a home that you like, or you can be in the most beautiful place of nature you can imagine. You can create whatever you like and can stay there as long as you like. And those that live in that area are not subject to what's termed the judgment. They've most likely gone through their life review before they died. In fact, if you sit with anyone who is dying, almost all of them will go through some kind of a life review. They want to tell you their story or they want to ask you if you think so-and-so will forgive them or forget about, or they just want to tell you their stuff. And it's really important to just be there and hear that, and just listen to that and kind of help them through that. Those who recognize that second light may or may not be required to incarnate again. It's not totally their choice, but it's not the same as what we term the judgment, which is the third stage of the bardo. And most common people, quote unquote common people, those who are just in existence here and who are not giving any thought to the lessons they've learned or how to serve others or how they can better themselves or their lives no matter where they find themselves, those people all go through the judgment. And usually it's because they haven't really looked at or learned from life as they've lived it. So their own soul subjects them to that judgment afterwards. And by judgment, I mean it's you that sits in judgment of yourself. What happens is you're kind of a captive audience, and your heart seed Adam plays out the entire record of your life in your just past existence. Sometimes it also brings up information about past incarnation, so you can understand and get insight from what happened this lifetime, recognizing relationships and events and all of those kinds of things. And oh gosh, for a lot of people, this process of review begins in the dream state. You'll start dreaming about things that you've done in the past and haven't really healed or understood or whatever. And a lot of times people who are in such a difficult state, so angry when they die or so hurt, so overwhelmed emotionally or by the mental processes, will be taken by the angels of death or the angels of healing to a haven of rest, you might say, where they can heal and rest, and they sleep, basically. They are unconscious for some time till they've developed enough strength and finally ask for help and are ready to review the life and understand and take acceptance for, accept responsibility for everything that happened and understand why it happened a little more, that kind of thing. So that's the bardo in a nutshell. There's a lot more to it, but I don't want to overwhelm you with too much informational stuff. If you want to read more about this, there's lots of good books out there on death and dying. And I think there are some things on tape. Kubler-Ross, I'm not sure if she speaks too much about the bardo specifically, but her work I highly recommend. And you can't go wrong, you know, in reading her books or listening to some of her tapes. The process of the bardo is so important in the Eastern teachings that they stress preparing your whole life as if you're going to die, you know, the next moment, the next day, whatever it is, really living your life prepared to die kind of thing. And I think in this culture it's a sad thing, and it's beginning to change, but not fast enough for most of us, that we don't really address death in the midst of life so we are prepared for it. And there are so many people who die alone, and I just feel that no one should ever have to do that. Someone should have enough heart and enough compassion that they would sit with you, you know, because you don't know until you're in the process what fears you have that have not been healed and released, or what concerns. It all comes up at the end, especially the mind. If you haven't learned to still your mind and get it to let go and just be passive and open. They talk about the sky of mind in the Buddhist Tibetan teachings. And if you haven't learned how to still that, it's just going to really grab you. And it will be full of questions and full of fear and full of wanting to know and understand at the moment when you really need to be most at peace. And if you have a person that can sit with you who knows anything about the death process, all they have to do is just gently assist you like we talked last time. You don't have to do much of anything other than be love. Just be there for the person. It's such a gift. If you want to learn about your own death, go sit with someone who's dying. I highly recommend it. no matter how scared you are of the process or how intimidated or how overwhelming it might be, just go and do that for a relative or whatever.